You don't need to model it. It's your other
fault. Oh. This is the 3rd of November. So what...
In Argyle Street.
What brought you to Fitzroy?
Well, I suppose it was... we're living in a sort of share house in Northland. And there was a little bit of money to put a deposit on the street for Jason, actually. And I would sort of like Fitzroy. Because of the going to the university, I always loved the area. And we all lived in Lygon Street and all around there. And Fitzroy was a bit more affordable than Carlton. So... we went first to John Street, Roy, in the sort of 74, I think, 73, 74. And we're there about 10 years before moving. And, and I sort of grew to love the place. Or I did love the inner suburbs anyway. And
just going back quickly to your university time, you graduated in 60...
I don't know the year exactly.
And it was early, mid-60s.
Somewhere around there, like that,
And then went on to do more work on urbanisation or urbanism.
I graduated from the architecture school.
Yeah.
And then I'd worked a bit through the course. I'd taken a year off and worked for Alasdair Knox in Eltham because I loved that stage. I loved all that. And
my brick world.
My brick world.
Father.
And then when I graduated, I'd done a school for my thesis, and I loved all that. So I went up to the government architect in New South Wales. Do you want to know all this? This is a bit irrelevant.
If you like. But, it's not irrelevant because
it's the influences.
It's where you
went to Fitzroy.
So I went up there and worked for the government architect, who was probably the best employer in Australia at that time, and possibly, because he was a very benign, humane sort of guy, and he organised the workplace instead of hierarchically, which most... He organised it into groups, and each group worked on a particular building type, like there was a school, big public building. So, and we had specification writers and, everything we could want, the engineers. And so, sort of as a new graduate, suddenly I was designing this school. It was unbelievable for someone out of university. But you had this support, and you had head of the team, and they all backed you up. But it was just a fantastic learning. And a lot of architects who went on to become, not talking about me, but especially in New South Wales, then Murcutt, all those sort of architects, Ken Woolley, they all started there, and it was because of this enlightened way of organisation.
So, going back to the 70s when you arrived at John Street, what was the community like?
Well, I think it was just changing. There were still a lot of Italian, the houses bought from Italians. Next door was Ian Robinson and Sue, so they'd been at the university. On the other side was the Maltese family. The family up from them was, but that was quickly bought by, then down this way towards the Standard Hotel was Ken Ely, who worked at Telstra. And then there was Norma and Wally, who was Polly. Opposite was May and Peaky, who made plaster mannequins. They arrived in Fitzroy in the night, and they actually brought people out from their village to work in this sort of indentured sort of way. And
that's a two-story property.
That was all May and Peaky. And May was best friends with Freddie Asmussen at Myers, who was the window designer at Myers. And so every now and again, Freddie Asmussen, renowned window dresser, did all Myers sweep up in the Rolls Royce. May would come out in his impeccably dressed suit. And then hobnob. And so it was a mixed area. And around that area was the old dairy, which is now where flats are in John Street. And that was Aboriginal squatters. So the Aboriginal presence in Fitzroy then was much stronger. And there were sheds, old dairy sheds. Mm-hmm. It was quite habitable in a certain way. And it was sort of quite good.
Mm.
And then a little later on at the end of the street, people like Frank Costigan bought the house during the Costigan trial.
The end of John Street?
Yeah.
On Bell Street or on?
No, on Moore Street.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Directly at the end. And so we were reading about the Costigan Royal Commission and looking up the street.
Oh,
yes. And then there was a woman's refuge on the corner. Came the old funeral parlour in Wall Street and Fitzroy Street.
Yeah.
Anyway,
That was the immediate invite.
Was it a woman's refuge when you arrived?
No, it wasn't. I don't know what it was. I think it was a share house, a rooming house.
Right. Yes.
And it had been a funeral parlour at
the time. Can you tell us a bit more about the dairy?
I don't really. Because it wasn't an operating dairy then, it was derelict.
Mm.
And the buildings were derelict. And it was sort of had that sort of
the
charm of the ruin.
And an open space.
Exactly.
The housing.
That's right.
Yes.
So occasionally you'd walk across there, but you had to be quite careful. You wouldn't do it after dark.
Mm.
People would.
But
I can't tell you about the operation of the dairy. That was before my time.
But it was quite a meeting point for the average community.
Yeah.
Were they living there? Or
squatting.
Meeting there?
Squatting, yeah.
And that is owned by a single owner?
It was bought by Walter Moore from either the people who owned the... I think he might still own those, but I'm not quite sure.
Because there's another development in Moore Street, a swimming pool that I think. So is it Old Moore?
Yes.
He is the owner of
I know what you're talking about. Yes. Yes, he did own that whole place and developed it. And I think he still does. Yes, he does.
Yes.
Not the only place he owns in Battle. Walter Moore.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Mm.
Well, this house, to the point where you decided to buy this house.
Yeah.
That was in 70?
Then I think I bought this house in about 83, 84. Might have been 84.
And were you doing work with the council then? That was the residence?
Yes.
Yes, yes. So that's one of the big topics that we need to get to.
Well, in John Street, Peter Elliott lived over the back in Fitzroy Street, so his backyard, so backed onto the lane, which backed onto, so, and we had quite a lot to do with one another over the back. And then, well, it was the time of Whitlam had got into power in 72, and we
wasn't it?
We sure a fabulous time. And suddenly you realise, you could do community things. Get money to do community. Yeah. Things weren't just about economics and earning money, it was about doing things, contributing, and so we got into the spirit of all this and formed an economic union, some from the pram factory and some other people, teachers. And because of the sort of Whitlamite, the change of government and change, that there was more money for people who were working in the arts who could do work for nothing. It all increased, I think, in it.
Yeah.
As well as Arts Council grants, which came a little later.
Yes.
But the dole, suddenly, the work at the pram, collect the dole, and then we shared our incomes to even it out.
The economic union that you're talking about was centred on the pram, was that one?
No, not really.
No, it was centred on...
There was sort of...
The pram was doing a version of that in a way.
It was a parallel thing, but it just so happened that we were like-minded people. Mm. So there's Bruce Benson type people. And then there was the Max Gillies group.
Yes.
And more teachers a bit wealthier. Yeah. So I suppose it was sort of part of that era. And
What was the economic union doing? What were some of the projects that you were...
It wasn't really a project-based.
No.
It was just that we just pooled our entire income and also the houses. So we had people living in our house. So we shared that house and they didn't pay rent. And then there were other houses, and every Thursday someone would in turn. And I think we were becoming heavily vegetarian. So that was the beginning of the vegetarian, because it was cheaper, probably.
And it was all centred around the bill, around the John Street house at that stage?
Not exactly. There were four houses. Yeah. There was a house in Bell Street that was Phil and Di Sumner. There was...
What number Bell Street? Just give us an idea where it is.
Between Cremorne Street and Nicholson Street on the south side. Mm. It used to have balconies, 1930s balconies. Someone's restored the front. So it was distinctive. Yes. It's not new.
Yes. No.
Anyway, so...
And it was a self-generating community where you pulled...
Well, everyone brought their money up first.
Yes. I've heard tell of this. It sounded, we were living in the Dandenongs. We used to envy this. So it was a terrific, you know, round the pram factory, round Max, and all of you lost. It was amazing. So you pulled your money. Go on, describe it.
And then people would say what they wanted the money for that week, and we'd discuss it. And then people took turns to be the treasurer. No one wanted to be. I had to go to bank the money. And we built up some surpluses. So each person had a choice of doing what they wanted with this. And Tony Taylor, of course, went over to Bruce and Jenny used to sort of furnish their house.
So there were quite substantial surpluses.
No, not really. No. But every year someone got an opportunity, more or less. And eventually I went overseas.
To Rome?
Before.
Yeah.
So everyone had a little. But then people started having it.
Yes.
Partners, like, say things like, you should get an accountant because you wouldn't have to pay tax. And we'd say, but we believe in it. And people would get cross. I'm probably idealising it.
But how long did it last, though?
5 years.
What were some of the major sort of communal things you did?
Well, that was the communal thing, really. I mean, but you mean the people in the group?
Yes.
No, we didn't really actually embark on projects. That was our project.
Which is a way of life, rather than a project-based thing.
But it did enable everyone to do things, other things that they wanted to do. Because we were quite a disparate group. But I suppose that was the climate in which you started to think, well, you know, you thought about class and about the privileges that you'd had, which you'd always taken for granted. Didn't realise that was privilege.
And Fitzroy would trigger that kind of thinking because it was such, I'm assuming, so on.
So we thought, we wondered what we do architecturally, you know. Sort of, and I met Peter Elliott, who was over the bank. And at that time, Fitzroy Council was idealism and...
literally on the council or recognising that the council was the way to make things happen?
Well, I think that's, you know, in the period to get in which Whitlam was, before he got in, and there was a sort of new, sort of people were trying to water down Labour a bit to get, so that they could get in, I suppose. And in Fitzroy, I mean, this is my reading of it, I don't know, but people like Collins and the Stellings and Lennon and Hoagland and Ahau, Wes Elliott, and, well, there's a whole bunch of them got onto council. With that idea as well, to, well, for Labour, local Labour to sort of adapt to the times, in a sense, and create a climate. I don't know how deliberate it was, but it happened.
Yes.
And so they were full of ideas and willing to back you if you had ideas. And they had invited Jenny Wills to, or I don't know how it worked, but to open this social plan. And at that day, and she asked Peter and I to do, council on that, to do some architectural probably for nothing. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Probably. But so we did that, and then we started.
You did what?
Oh, renovations.
Yes, for yes, the building. Right.
And
we be specific about the building.
Oh, it's where Bull is now in Brunswick Street.
Right.
And you know the council.
Yes.
So they own that. That owned that with the former supermarket and put the social planning. They wanted to have a shop front for people to
social planning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Rather than in the town hall. So, and the Fitzroy Legal Service, who'd been up in further up Brunswick Street, was Trotters, which was it's funny the way you think in layers, you know. Shop on the corner of Moore and Brunswick.
Yeah.
Clothing.
Oh, no.
The recycled clothing shop. Yeah.
Did all that with the legal service.
Yes.
And then they moved down to social planning. Yeah. And then we decided that there was advice that we could give people about buildings, about repairs on buildings, and run it in a similar way to the legal service.
Right.
Housing up here.
So was it for owners of buildings to...
Yeah, or anyone.
Anyone.
But so of course it was owners.
Tenants. Tenants if they were determined to try and...
Work on that.
...end something.
It was pretty basic to begin with. Yeah. It was advice on damp and all the common... problems.
So did this overlap with the program that Barry Pullum was talking about, where there was a real attempt to stop stop developers saying that houses were unfit to be inhabited?
Yeah. Who were slapping
demolition orders on houses that shouldn't have been demolished, that were mendable and so on.
Yeah.
He had some of his own about that.
Yes.
So did this grow out of the same...
Yes, it was perhaps a bit part of that.
Yes.
The slum clearance had happened, but we were still fighting to save houses.
Yes.
And this was a way to do it, and we used to... And also, we published articles sort of once a month in Times on how to replace a sash window.
I remember, yes.
Yes. What to do about rising damp.
Yes.
And
it was very do-it-yourself stuff.
That's right.
Yes.
And it was part of that whole earth catalogue era, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, do-it-yourself. And also, it was related to that demographic a bit as well.
Yeah.
I mean, people wouldn't be DIY now in Fitzroy. I don't think not quite so.
I can recall it from the side of Fitzroy at that time, a very exciting social plan occurring.
Yeah.
Things that council hadn't necessarily dipped into previously. Winston McCackie was around, old care.
And libraries took off into much better libraries for kids as the demographic changed.
Yes, well,
so from
childcare became a big thing.
So from that shop front, had all Myers, the social planning.
Then there
was, I've been talking to Laurie O'Brien, just to get some pointers. The Urban Conservation Advisory Committee, did that come from that beginning?
Yeah, it did, from the Fitzroy,
And so can you tell us that story?
Yeah, I think that was the Alfred Deakin's birthplace. There wasn't a building surveyor, there was a city engineer, and he had absolutely no appreciation of city. I mean, he just should be blasted. And so there was a continual struggle between him and the councillors and the community, because he was issuing demolition.
And the struggles happened in meetings or...?
Meetings and...
Picketing.
I mean, there was a big scene, you know, where McDonald's is on the corner of Smith and Victoria. Because that was... There's some wonderful, wonderful house, anyway. And this guy gave it. And it had a long history. I don't know the history of that because it's actually...
In Victoria Parade.
I wasn't working in Collingwood. But it was part of the whole scene. It must have been in Fitzroy, because it was under his. And he issued it. And then the store that broke the camel's back was the demolition of Alfred Deakin Street.
Yeah.
And he didn't even know. I mean, so, and that's what enraged Louise and councillors as well. And UCAC, the Urban Conservation Advisory, we got together, there was sort of architects, Oda and you probably don't know them, but Dan Lennon.
For the sake of the record, it's
good. Okay.
Gordon Loder, did you
Gordon say? Loder.
Yeah.
He's an architect. Ray Tonkin went on to become head. There was Peter Lovell, Peter Elliott, myself, Rosemary Kisley, Louise briefly, and so to begin with, our first task was catalogue all the buildings in Fitzroy, because we realised we had to set up a sort of rating system and provide it to him and say these buildings are not to be touched at all and these are to be discussed with us, and this is the committee that you discuss it with.
Do you have a year when you did this?
I think 74 was, I think, when Fitzroy Housing Repair Advisory, and then we started the Architectural Advice Service, which was to advise this engineer, and then the councillors formalised it into this, and mainly Louise, because she was mainly much in it of the councillors. Some of them weren't interested in building, but they're interested in other things. So UCAC, conservation, grew out of that sort of thing. And we divided into, and every morning before work from 8 o'clock till 10, allocated each other areas, took photos of these buildings and sort of rated them visually and made these cards and gave them, put them into the, as a reference. And I think we gave them rough gradings.
As a group or the two?
Yeah, the UCAT, the whole group.
Yes, yes. Fascinating.
So it was fantastic. Yes. I mean, and you had all this energy to all of this stuff.
You were photographing and rating.
Mm.
And where's all that documentation?
It went into the... Then UCAC recommended to council that they appoint a planner. And I think Louise might have been involved. That was a way of actually coming in over. They couldn't sack him because he had probably went on forever. And so Harry Bechervais was hired, and he was, I think, urban planner. Mm. Probably, certainly in the inner suburbs. I think maybe there might have been one at Malden. I'm not quite, no. It was pretty unusual anyway. Mm. So then all the cars went into his office, and then he hired people. I think with us, we were on this election
committee. Yes, yes.
And hired these past Fitzroy study. There were some ex-students from architectural conservation type students. There wasn't a course of architecture students who specialised in history. They did the South Fitzroy study, and our cards went to them, and that was
You managed to cover the whole of South Fitzroy.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know where they are now. I presume there's some. But then they did their own rating study. So,
and they being?
Well, Liz Vine.
Who were going round?
Nigel Lewis. I can't remember the fourth. Yeah. Anyway, they did their own thing. Became so.
How did that relate to the demolition of the slums? State government, rather.
That happened.
That was in the 60s.
Yes.
That's when the Housing Commission did doorstop surveys, windscreen surveys. That's a slum. In fact, the house that did in John Street had a Housing Commission. Lots of houses did, because they wanted to make sure that they had a foot in the door if they wanted.
So
that had happened before.
So by the 70s, you were Rootsworth. Consolidated the house.
Mm. Mm. And then after that, I suppose, people from UCAC found that St Vincent on the move. And
yes. Auburn University by then?
We realised that Glass Terrace and that happy engineer, even a demolition. So we knew that those buildings were on the verge. So mainly Rosemary, me, Ray Sumner, Loda, no, the whole UCAC. Ray Sumner was another member. He was an historian. And we got together and made cases for the to have been established in 1974 under Rimmer, I think. And we suddenly realised we could use that. So you had to prepare these cases, or you know all about it now. So we prepared. It took ages. Mm-hmm. Each of us had a role, and we prepared these documents to present at the tribe. What was the head? Was Historic Buildings Council. And gradually over the years, we worked on this one with Royal Terrace, Brunswick Street, yes. And then Barcelona Terrace, and Austin House, Glass Terrace, mm-hmm. worked on Austin House. So we got in the odd extra person, Char Arms, right in the heart territory. Devonshire Arms Hotel.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
Belvedere on the corner of, what was the Belvedere on the corner of Brunswick. Then we expanded our activity down to the Academy, which was about to do things. Mm-hmm. So then we registered Archbishop Gould's house. Reading,
Palmer.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I did a few things down. And that was really terrific.
Yes, yes.
We won the day.
So we won all those. Yes. Yes. But different day.
Yes. How many years did that take?
Several years. Because everyone worked.
We're in 1974, thereabouts now?
It's later.
It went into the 80s.
Yeah, it went into... UCAC went up until sort of 85.
When was it?
I think maybe 75, 76. I'm a bit vague about it. Mm-hmm. I do have these boxes of documents that I just...
And it's quite an achievement, so.
Oh, it's huge.
It was.
Absolutely huge.
Yeah. Well, it was a terrific group, really. Mm. And we just sort of fell into these little roles, which became a bit formulaic, but sort of exciting. I mean, we all egged one another.
Yeah. Once you felt that you were actually winning for these troubles.
It was a good
first heading.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Was it a formal process? I mean, did you have to present to...
Look, sometimes it took a whole day, sometimes more, because we used to get the National Trust as well. There was a guy called Warwick Forge, who was a lawyer in the National Trust. He really whipped the trust in. So we'd organise for them to make a presentation as well, because... And if you had some special interest group, mm-hmm. I can't think of that, but that was relevant to the building, had, you know, gather everything together. So we sort of worked together. And
did it disband because there was no further need for it, or what?
Well, the South Fitzroy study happened, and then Payne government was in, and Minister for Planning, whom I know very well, Evan Walker, was the Minister for Planning. Mm. And he then, I don't know, I think he did it for Fitzroy early on. I don't know whether we were the first or not, but he made these, out of the South Fitzroy study, somehow they had A and B and C air, and they were protected under the state. Mm. So we all breathed a sigh of relief and sat back and said,
Evan,
that's the end of that. We're protected.
It's wonderful having Evan as the minister.
That's right, but of course...
Never in the long run, those years felt better.
So can we change focus a little bit to the council at that time? Was it a full Labour council? Or because a number of independents came in later. Did you interact with local council and have their support behind all of this as well?
Oh, yes. You had to.
Can you talk about the nature of the... Changing nature of the country.
I'm a bit hazier on that actually, but I knew we always, because UCAC was sort of part of the council, so we were representing the council. That was very important for Historic Buildings Council.
Unanimous support or?
Oh yes, I would think. Well, we had the majority. We always did. So I think everyone, and Fitzroy was changing, and there were people they liked. No, so they wanted to preserve their little patch as well.
Yes.
And there were some people that came. It was a Labour. I can't tell you, because, you know, people didn't stand necessarily. Those early times were all barrel labour. I mean, everyone was fighting to get change. But later on, there were independents who wanted to preserve the buildings, I think. Don't remember developers or estate agents like you got in other... But you did get some sort of odd independents. I don't remember them, really. We must have had the majority.
And you were running your own practice during all this? All of you involved were?
Yeah, everyone was working.
One particularly bitter in the terrace that was demolished on Lorry Parade and Gore Street.
The Blanche Terrace? Blanche Terrace was a big fight, but it was saved.
No, this has gone for and Victoria. There are now brand new built because it's been demolished without approval.
Yes, I think that's the Vic Pass site. That's the one the engineer opposite stretched from Gore to that corner. That was the Vic Pass site. That was the grand stately mansion. And it happened a bit before me. Jane Lennon was really big in that. And, the unions did come in, but I wasn't that involved. But I think that was...
Go back to the neighbourhood of this house, because I think that would be... do you feel we've got enough on the council, on the actual work outside the house? But coming here and what the neighbourhood was like here, Argyle Street has cropped up in some of our other interviews. So it's terribly interesting to have sense of what you and Jason found when you... The 80s, did you say?
Yes, 80s. So this was owned by an Italian family and was a flat downstairs and a flat and a kitchen upstairs and a kitchen downstairs. And next door was an Italian family and they had owned both. This was originally three brickstone cottages. And in 1873, the guy who owned it, I think might have been a stonemason, because the first person here was a stonemason, so possibly. And he added the second story on this one, and those remained as two little cottages. And this family bought both of them, and then eventually they demolished the third one, made it into a garage. They were the days. And then next door to that was a cream veneer, which eventually became the Aboriginal childcare co-op, because at this time, with the red scheme from Whitlam, this is going back to sort of font, there was money for these childcare centres, and that was an initiative of social planning. And there was this one here for Aborigines. There was one, and just turned out to be basically for Greek people. One in North Fitzroy tended to be basically Turkish. So it was quite interesting the way they had their own character. And they were community collectives that ran the show. I don't know, via the council, I think, because the idea was always to do away with the state government to the state. But so this was an Aboriginal co-op was part of that. And Peter and I did work on some of those early, you know. But next door to that was a Chilean family who'd escaped from the Allende government. And they had a boarding house of about six Chilean single guys who lost out the back. And they used to roll home at 3 a.m. in the morning singing these Spanish or whatever they were songs. Drunk off their mind, they'd been at the Hogar up the Spanish club on Johnson Street. And she, who was the most exquisite looking woman, and her family lived in the house in the front. And the next door was about the same time I came, Bronwyn Little. And I don't know who she bought from. And then next door to her is Judy Bartossi, who's, or her parents. Wow. And then on Young Street, where the... I can't remember what was there now.
It's terrible.
Then opposite here was, on the corner, was Greek boot...
Corner of Brunswick Street.
And it's been a hairdresser as well. I think it was owned by the Greek. Then next door to him, store was the belt shop, and both of those. And they had a little shop front. Husband and wife made the belt. Next one.
Leatherworks in the area.
Yes.
Next started then. Then there was a shop owned by Italians, and there was a mask shop, I forgot.
Yes.
And Maggie May was on the back, a painter. Opposite was the Pink Lady Chocolate under the Red Triangle. Diagonally.
And the Red Triangle was there, of course.
Yes, I think it was there.
Yeah.
And then the Shawcross building under that, Divine Light Health Food Shop. Do you remember the Divine Light?
Slipped in the 70s.
Somewhere around there.
So you converted the house to...
back to what it was when... well, in the... oh, not quite.
And was there a garden?
No, there wasn't a garden. Mm-hmm. Yes, now there's a very overgrown garden. But I can't bear cutting back the little bees die because all these wattle birds are just... and now, you know, because the cat isn't here, suddenly we've got these birds everywhere. It's great. Mm-hmm. So until we get... and the blackbirds made the nest.
The lovely house, I think.
Not lovely, yes, I suppose.
Yes. Would you like a cup of tea now?
I'd like a break.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So I just want to take you back to Walmore.
Oh, yeah.
Lived in North Strand, I believe.
But he still lives there.
You mentioned previously that you...
Not directly, but worked to put what we call the Beswick building, that cat building, on the register, because he'd bought it with a syndicate, and we were worried that maybe we knew they were going to develop it, and we were very worried because for us that was, you know, one of the land. And so we appeared at the Historic Buildings Council against him and his syndicate owners. And they only owned two. I think it was not... I can't... they owned two, and then someone else owned four. I can't remember. Anyway, the people who owned the six or four, I think... no, sorry. Wall owned four when his syndicate owned four.
Right.
And actually, the Abrahams family owned the Black Cat building, and I think the one next door to it. And they were... very keen for us to read. They were so sweet. They'd run. When they came from Germany post-war, the remnants of their family, this is Christine's family, her father, this is totally irrelevant, but his father, before the war, had diamonds drilled into some teeth of him and his wife in Germany.
Yeah.
And they were weavers. They had weaving. And then they escaped. Gentile family. Christine, who was the blonde, blue-eyed one, was the one who went foraging for food, bring back a potato, be their food for the day. And anyway, then I don't know if it was after the war or if they escaped. I can't remember. He went to Manchester, where they were selling off some weaving machinery cheaply. And he brought it to Australia. And set it up in the Black Cat.
Wow.
And made socks.
Yes.
I think it was Red Robin. Look, I may be making this up, actually. Somehow or other, in the back of my mind, I have a feeling it might have been Red Robin, but it may not have been. Anyway, they made socks right up until... So, anyway, and they were very keen for it to be registered, but Walmore and his... cohorts weren't, so we had to risk against their...
It was a huge thing, wasn't it?
Mm.
Saving that building, my God.
Mm. Mm.
We've been talking to Barry Pullen, and he talked a lot about genesis of the Fitzroy Residents Association.
Oh, yes, that's another stream.
So how did that, all the years that existed, and how did it interact with the ways you interacted?
It had really started before I came to Fitzroy, and I think could have been, I mean, all those people I mentioned who are on the council, I have a feeling they might have either started there, they started it anyway, and it was possibly contemporaneous with the Carlton Association. I think the Carlton Association was the one around here, and then they started that, and then they maybe their strategy was to get onto the council. I don't know how it worked, but you probably know from Barry. But by the time I got to Fitzroy with passing repairs and all that, it had gone into, it could have been, because all those people were now in council and more. Mm-hmm. And then was when George Redding and Peter Bay moved into Young Street, and there was a whole lot of issues with noise. Like they in particular really crapped off with the rainbow pumping it out at that stage. And there were, I mean, we were all a bit upset by noise has been subjacent. And the noise, you know, that down the track became a bit usual. And so it was Dot Redding who actually started it up again. That's probably in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then I became involved in that, and Jeff Barber, and I think Louise came back a bit, and a whole lot of, and Rosemary Kiss, and I can't remember, I could, but I haven't thought about it for a while.
That's right.
So I think that's, because I remember Louise ringing me and saying, I've got this money from the old FRA, in the bank sitting there under FRA, so that if you need it for something, we can probably, you know. And she was really pleased that it started up again because the baby is hers. So, but I think the money must be still sitting there somewhere. Yeah.
Interesting. So, was there a Fitzroy Historical Association parallel with the Bristons, or were they two quite distinct?
I think it grew out of the exhibition. I think, we had the exhibition, the Fitzroy exhibition. Laurie and June Zenyard and Alan Willingham, Rosemary, all photographs.
Yes.
And so it took 2 years or so because we advertised for locals to bring photos in and had to vet them. Are they good enough or not? Then we had to get photographers to blow them up and stuff like that. And that was in the 80s.
Publication came out of that.
The publication. Yes. And at the end of the exhibition, the Historic Society, Mary Lewis, and who you know.
that's useful.
Mm. So, and then out of that exhibition grew the book, because people started writing captions for the photos, and and they're in themes, and I think I did the layout for the exhibition, and some of the photos, but we employed someone to get it together, and the themes that are in the book had their genesis, in a way, in the themes and the...
Very heavy book.
You don't understand it again.
It's a very expensive book.
Isn't it expensive? Weighs a ton. It's all very heavy paper.
Yeah. It is.
So is there anything we've overlooked? Is there anything you would like to... Can I prompt you a little bit?
Yeah.
Gloria O'Brien says she remembers your particular work with Glass Terrace, really part of the South Fitzroy Conservation Plan, as you said before.
Well, Glass Terrace, we worked on it as... and then what happened was we registered it, but it's still within the ownership of St. Vincent's. And so, I think Vincent's either wanted to buy it or they wanted to buy it. And I think that's how it all began. We got wind that they did, and then we realised why they would have wanted it. So we're still worried that they would take over the terraces. I mean, we didn't mind them using the terraces, but it was dangerous because their CEO that we went up against, Huffig, and I don't know, we just... So at that stage, I knew Dimity Reid, who had become... moved into the Ministry of Housing, the state government, the Kane government, had built it up, as opposed to today, when it's non-existent. But it was very... it was a good government department, good architecture department, and Dimity had got a job there, and so I went and she said she thought it was possible, and it happened.
And that's how it happened.
And
good on you, sir.
Well, I think, I mean, don't know what governments do. I mean, you can never predict anything, absolutely, but that seemed, so it seemed to put, that was a little stopper in Vincent's progress. I mean, it would have been all right. It would have been nice for all those buildings to belong to them if they used set, you know, but,
That was Tony saying he's going to be 10 to 9.
All right. Would you like another cup of tea?
So, just going back to the other question, was there anything else he did? The theme was life and time?
It would be nice if there was overall plan development of Fitzroy. I think paying the apartment and also guidelines for hand. I know that probably it's quite hard for the council. That
why is it hard now? Harder for it now?
Because of VCAT, which we all thought was a big saviour. The developers just go. The council is powerless, really. I think it was their power. Never really regained it, it seems. And so VCAT has been your way of overturning any decision you make. And unless the state governments change that situation, which paper seems such a citizens' tribunal, what a wonderful idea. But it's become a developers' tribunal. And unless that happens, you know, and that's what's so upsetting. But
who put it so expensive for citizens to respond?
I think it happened under the previous government, under Guy. I mean, it's really high now, but when it first started, you didn't pay anything to object. So it really has to be.
What is it now? 250?
I don't know. I haven't done one recently. It's more than that.
It's much more than that, and it's just gone up again. That's what made me notice it. But no, it's dire. I mean,
it's
really, really very difficult.
And then when developers bring in top-notch or top-notch bullies, you could say, barristers, and you hand round the hat and collect sort of. Well, I think for this development down here, we collected 12,000, which was quite a lot, but that doesn't buy you top-notch barrister by any means. And that went for 10 days.
With much change?
Very little. I think they took story off. And then a couple of years later, you know, the bill. I mean, you have to be so vigilant. So there's a lot of effort and money. Look, the scheme did change. It went through. Yes, the first time we went to VCAT was changed and it was lowered and simplified. And then something happened to the developer. He ran out of money or something, sold to another developer, got another architect who sort of imitated parts of the other architect. And somehow or other, I think we objected the second time too. It was also horrible.
And the name of the building we're talking about is?
It was called Cheese Grater, on the old Norman Brothers, but
very much so, very much so, very much.